We are going to talk about a topic today that's near and dear to my heart. It's being a stay-at-home mom. As 18 years ago, my husband and I made the decision, the choice, that we were going to live on one income and have me stay home with our kids. And I just have to tell you, I have never regretted that for one minute. It has been absolutely awesome. And I'm really thankful that my husband has always supported me in that. We were just talking last night, and he said, you know, what more valuable job is there than raising our kids? So if your spouse supports you in doing that, I want you to go home tonight, thank them, say thank you so much, verbalize that, because it's so important. The question I get a lot, and maybe you guys can relate to this, is don't you get bored? And I just want to bang my head. I have four boys, so boredom is not part of my vocabulary. But I always think, you know, I did not choose to do this for my entertainment. You know, I brought these four boys into the world, and I'm choosing to be there to provide security for them and provide guidance for them, and it's awesome. And I have loved being there to teach them things, teach them about God, do ministry together, experience all kinds of things together. I haven't regretted it at all. So I'm really looking forward to our discussion today. And Holly McCallum's here to share her experiences. And Holly is the wife of Dennis McCallum, who's one of our senior elders. And she's raised three kids who are all going strong with the Lord and leaders in this church. And she now has five grandkids that she's investing in now. And so we really appreciate her being here. And we really appreciate her being here, especially because today is her birthday. I just found out. So let's pray and we'll get this discussion started. God, I just really thank you for every person in this room today. They are all here because they love their kids and they want to do a good job with what you have entrusted them with. So I just really pray for you to speak through Holly. I know everybody's situation is different. Everyone has different things they're dealing with. And I just pray your spirit will encourage each person where they're at today. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you. Thanks for the little birthday song, too. Just what I wanted to start out the day, everybody focusing on me. But I'd like to welcome everybody to this great ministry of Xenos, the care group, talking about moms. I was asked to speak on this, benefits of staying at home, and I'm so happy that I was able to stay home with my kids, too. So thankful to my husband and to my church that totally supported me in that, and also I have no regrets at all. But one of the reasons they did not ask me to teach on this was because they thought I was the perfect mom, or that we had the perfect family. Because guess what? You all know there's no such thing as a perfect family, right? I hope you know that. If you came here this morning to get some kind of three-step formula to, you know, have the perfect family, then I'm afraid you're going to leave disappointed. But we do have some ideas to talk about that hopefully will be an encouragement to you. Just a little bit about myself. I was not raised in a Christian family. I had no idea of the Bible, Christianity, Jesus, any of it. And my family was pretty dysfunctional, really. Yeah, I mean, I felt loved in certain ways, but there was also a lot of neglect and, you know, overly permissive things and, you know, not such good things. But when I was age 12, my father passed away, which was pretty disturbing, to say the least. And I wanted so much for there to be such a thing as heaven, because I wanted to see him again sometime. But I thought, you know, how could you possibly know? I don't know. It's just a child's wishful thinking that there could be such a thing as heaven. So a few years later, my mother went to a Bible study, and she came home, and she's like, I've become a Christian. And my brother and I, good relativists that we were like, that's nice for you. Don't bother us with that kind of stuff, you know, and who are you to tell us what to think anyway? So after a few months, she absolutely made my brother and I go on a Christian retreat, which we were very rebellious about because her job was not to tell us what to do or where to go. So we went, and I knew that the people on this retreat had something different in their life, and I knew that it had something to do with having God in their life and a relationship with him. Like I said, I still didn't even understand the most basic concepts. But I found on that retreat that I could start a personal relationship with God, that he wanted to be my heavenly father, and that just sounded like really great news to me. On your little handout, it's going to kind of follow along with what I'm saying, but the first verse there should be very familiar. John 3:16, for God loved the world so much that he gave his one and only son, so that everyone who believes in him will not perish but have eternal life. What a fantastic promise that we can have a relationship with God. It says he loved us so much that he gave his son. Why did he give his son? Because there was a problem with people. People are separated from God. There's a huge gap there, and it's not a matter of doing good deeds or trying to do good works. We can never do enough good works to get to God. Instead, he sent his son to pay the penalty that we owed so that we could have a free gift, a forgiveness and eternal life. And all we need to do is receive that gift. Pretty simple. And then we can have eternal life. And then the next verse on there, I especially love in Romans 8, it says, you know, once that we've made this decision to become a believer in Jesus, it says you've not received a spirit of slavery leading to fear again, but you have received a spirit of adoption as sons by which we cry out, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we're children of God. So the idea that I can be adopted into God's family and to be his child was great news for me. It was life-changing news. You know, and there's no fear in that, but it says we can call him Abba Father, which means daddy. So I became a Christian at age 15, and I started coming to fellowship and learning about the Bible, and I also started dating Dennis when I was 15, and then 2 years later we got married. I know, I was only 17. It's kind of crazy. But we're still married after all these years. Hooray. Good things. I'll tell you a little bit more about my family in a minute, but I just, can you see that pretty house there? This is not my house. My house doesn't look anything like that, but I thought it was really pretty with the ivy on there. In John 14, it talks about Jesus is preparing a mansion for us, so maybe my mansion in heaven will look a little bit like that guy. I think it's really pretty. So what kind of a grandma would I be if I didn't show you some pictures of my sweeties? The girls are Lexi and Miria. In the middle is Micah, and then Logan and Max, and I'm so thrilled to be able to be their grandma. And it's really good news for me to know that I didn't have to repeat all the dysfunction that I grew up with, that things could be changed in one generation in my family, that I wasn't fated to have to repeat those same errors. So it's so good to see these guys who have moms and dads who love them well. Sweeties. One of the best pieces of advice I ever got when I was pregnant at age 21, well, I'll tell you that in a minute. First of all, I should say, when we got married, Dennis said, we are never going to have kids, ever. And I said, I don't think you can say that. How about if we say, we'll think about it when we're 30? You know, as a 17-year-old, that seemed like eternity away. But then somehow or other, when I was 21, I got pregnant, surprise, surprise. So I had to have a little talk with the Lord and tell him, okay, I know you're the creator of the universe, and you made all things, and you know all things, but I think possibly, in this case, you might have made a little mistake, because I didn't want kids, I don't know anything about kids, and wow, scary. So I went to the hospital. I still had never changed a diaper, nothing. I didn't know anything about it. Went to the hospital, and I had my darling little girl, and the pediatrician gave me the best advice. He said, babies are to enjoy. Take this baby home and enjoy her. So I was like, okay, this is what the doctor told me. I will go with that. And I did enjoy her. And these guys have parents that enjoy them as well. So we're talking today about stay-at-home moms, for the most part. I used some ivy here instead of arrows because I just thought ivy was cool looking. I'd like to, this makes it seem too simple. You stay-at-home moms or moms working outside the house, home by choice. There's actually lots of other kinds of moms. So what we're talking about is stay-at-home moms for the most part, but there are going to be principles for a lot of people to learn from. I would like to say the last thing in the world I would want to do is to make a single mom feel guilty about working. Sometimes moms have to work, and that's probably one of the hardest jobs in the world. So the last thing I would want to do is heap on more guilt. But there are principles here I think that you can take and learn from. And sometimes dads are home, and that's awesome, but I think it's really important for the little ones to have mom around. So, those moms who are working outside the home by choice, you know, to earn more money or for the prestige or something, if I could persuade you to think about being a stay-at-home mom, I would gladly do that. But maybe that's not my goal for today. So here again, this is a pretty simplistic chart. We have stay-at-home moms, two kinds. And life is never that black and white. But the inward focus, like the family, is the universe, and the outward focus, family. Inward focus families, I did some thinking about, and I actually looked up some stuff on homeschool. There's good things about homeschool. I'm not critical of that, but in my experience in the college group, some of the kids that have been homeschooled have been raised in this little bubble, and they don't really know how to relate to people outside of their bubble. And so for some inward-focused parents, the goal is to protect the children from the scary world out there. This one page on 20 great reasons you should homeschool, and don't take this to mean I'm critical of homeschooling, but I'm looking at this attitude. It says the only gang your kids belong to is your family. Well, that makes it sound scary. If they're not in your family, they're going to join a gang. You don't need security guards or metal detectors, and your family is right where they need to be at home. So you see this kind of overprotective sense of the inward-focused family. I went to a missionary assessment, and there was a couple there that had been raised in a Christian home, went to Christian schools. They totally lived in the Christian bubble, and they were kind of bragging about it. Like, we only listen to Christian music, we only read Christian books, you know, we're only with Christians all the time. And it seems so extreme, like, why would you want to be a missionary? You know, those people would be outside your bubble. But it was kind of paralyzing for them. So I would just caution you, if you think, you know, I can put a little bubble around my family and they'll be good, it may not be what you think it is. John 17:5 instructs us as believers, like, I didn't want to get you out of the world, you need to be in it. You know, not of the world, but in the world. So being overly protectionist is not a good idea. On your quote sheet, this is from a book called Books Children Love. And she says, we aren't to put blinkers so that a child can't understand what other people think. In other words, go ahead and read a wide spectrum of books. Talk over together ideas you don't think are right. So, you know, let's teach our children to think and be involved and not just try to overprotect them. So yes, we're going to be talking a little bit about outward-focused stay-at-home families. A book that I read that was really foundational for me, What is a Family? By Edith Schaefer. Some of you may be reading that. One of her chapters is, a family is a door with hinges and a lock. Sometimes you have to lock the door and be there with your family. Sometimes the door needs to swing open and share your family and share your home with other people. So we want to have a balance, I guess, and not create the idea that my family is the center of the universe, because they're not. Let's talk a little bit about some of the hindrances to staying at home. This one comes up a lot. We need more money. That's why we have to have everybody working, because we need more money. Well, maybe we need more money because we've just been overspending, you know, and we need to have some, I don't know, discipline in that area. Maybe we have such huge debt that we feel like we're forced to have to go to work. And also, there is the lure of materialism. I have to go to work so I can get more stuff. Well, I was watching CNN the other day. There's this news guy on there called Fareed Zakaria, and he was interviewing an economist, and he, Fareed, was talking about the good life. And he said, the good life, if you have a basic middle-class life with a home and a car, you don't need to get all these other acquisitions. You know, the push is like, I have one car, I need two cars, I need three cars. He said, if you have this basic lifestyle, the good life is family, good relationships, and time to do activities you enjoy. So even he realized, you know, we have to draw a line with the acquisition that will suck us right away from the things that will give us a good life. I looked up our culture's values, which was a little hard with election time. But here's some of the things that I found. Values in American society: wealth, success, power, prestige, material success, all these kinds of things. And there's nothing on here about a healthy family, which I was kind of surprised to see. But we need to resist that lure of materialism that makes such empty promises. I have a few verses for you on that, that are on your sheet too. 1 Timothy 6, people who, and listen to who he's talking to, people who long to be rich fall into temptation and are trapped by many foolish and harmful desires that plunge them into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, and some people craving money have wandered away from the true faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows. So it's not so much saying it's a sin to be wealthy, but it's a sin to love that. And it can bring you many sorrows. And Matthew 6, kind of a classic passage where he says, don't store up your treasures here, but store them up in heaven. Because he says, wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will be also. And he says, no one can serve two masters, for you will hate one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. So as believers, we take these passages seriously and we think we should have a healthy fear that materialism is going to suck our affections away to things that aren't going to really satisfy us in the long run. We also have Romans 12:2 that says, it's not on there, it says basically don't let the world squeeze you into its mold. You know those values I just read? We got to resist that kind of thinking that material things are going to bring us happiness. So that's one hindrance when we think that we need a lot of money. We need to avoid materialism, but we also need to replace that with something really fantastic, you know, simple living, satisfying things. We can't just say stop doing this, but we need to pursue something else. So the issue for many people is not that they need more money. The issue for a lot of people is just a question of their identity. So I've asked a couple of friends, my daughter-in-law and Lorena, Aaron and Lorena, to come up and just give a little testimony about, you know, the issue of identity. So ladies, this is Aaron McCallum and Lorena White.
Okay. That was really loud. So I sort of grew up in an environment where it just was always about, like, I don't know, I remember being like elementary school and like you need to work hard because when you go to middle school, you know, you need to like be prepared and you got to be prepared to go to college. And there was just always this drive of like you need to further yourself and you need to be successful like academically so therefore you can get a good job and you can make a lot of money. And I really bought into a lot of, like, you know, women need to be independent and we don't need, like, guys to take care of us. And that kind of, like, formed me while I was kind of an adolescent. It was just, like, I really need to take care of myself. You know, I could, like, I kind of totally saw myself, like, unmarried and never with a family and just kind of having the American dream or whatever. And so at a point, I decided to follow the Lord and kind of, you know, seek his perspective on a lot of things, and I realized that his priorities were kind of different than mine, just looking at the money stuff, like I was that person. So I felt like as he was kind of bringing up some priorities in my life, I actually got married to Joe, and right away I got pregnant with our first boy, Micah, and I was not too happy about it. And I spent a couple months just really feeling depressed and down, and eventually I kind of came to terms with it, and then after I had my son, I started realizing that I felt really uncomfortable with the staying at home part. Like, we just kind of did that because I felt like that was what was good. And, you know, there's some other circumstances that just kind of, we ended up doing that. And I just kind of kept feeling like, I don't feel fulfilled, and this feels uncomfortable for me, and I wish I could, you know, maybe just go to work and, like, maybe Joe could stay home. Not really that I wanted to do that, but I just kept feeling these, like, I don't fit into this role. And I started to realize that it wasn't really that I couldn't do the job, but that something was wrong with where I placed my identity. I just was so wrapped up in, like, I need to be successful, I need to have a good career. And so staying at home to me was kind of, it looked like, you know, I'd given up some things that I really wanted to do. And I felt like after a while, I really prayed through that, and God was kind of, he gave me this really cool vision for staying at home with my kids. Like, just imagine your kids growing up wanting to further the kingdom of God. And you may think that changing diapers is a waste of your energy, but wait down the road when your kids are, like, being, you know, effective for the Lord. And I feel like that slowly has been changing my perspective. And I wish I could say that it's, like, totally gone and I'm, like, totally switched around. But there are times still today where I'm like, man, I still feel like I'm missing, I'm wasting my energy. But I really feel like I don't regret this decision. We have our second child now who is so precious. but I really feel like this was something that came up with me, and I'm really glad that I had resources like Holly and some books to kind of help me get a vision for being a stay-at-home mom. So.
Well, my story is a little similar, and I wrote stuff down, which I've always judged my husband for in public speaking, but here's me. I wrote it all down, so now Jim can judge me. So I was born in Mexico City in 75, and I moved to the States in 84, and I learned English as the second language. My parents were divorced, and I went to Thomas Worthington High School up the road, and I was president of my class for 3 years there, and I graduated in 94, and I played lacrosse at Ohio State with a scholarship, and, you know, so I'm setting it up for I was that girl that, you know, externally had it all together or whatever. I was a salesperson after that and a third grade teacher for 5 years. And when I became pregnant in 2008, because of my experiences, I had decided that I wanted to stay home because of examples and students that I had and whatever, but I drug my feet. I mean, my boss was like, so are you coming back? And I'm like, no. I was very upset about it. And I realized why, and that's because of some identity issues. I chose to follow Christ in 1997. And personally, I really took a good degree of identity from athletic performance, relationship with a man, academic performance, and at the time that I chose to stay home with my new baby, I didn't realize it until I was at home. I mean, I was so disoriented and depressed and just kind of like, wow, what is this? I'm not this kind of person. This isn't me. And I realized that I took a lot of security and identity from the feedback that you get from people, affirmation, you know, from a paycheck, the structure, adult interaction, the productivity that I got from my job at the time. So you realize what you actually take an identity from when it's kind of taken away from you. And I think that there's some kind of destructive ways that I could have handled the situation with still staying at home. I mean, I could have resented my kids and just, you know, done it because of finances and whatever, but I mean, it was the Lord and I think some good reading that changed my mind and gave me a vision for being at home and what it means. This book, Generation Me, answered a lot of questions. I'm not that unique. My generation is perfectionistic women, you know, that try to do it perfectly. And trying to do the stay-at-home mom thing perfectly can lead to an inward-focused thing, to some really destructive areas. The Proverbs say that with her own hands, a foolish woman can break down her house. So I don't think the answer is like, you know, stay at home. I do think that is one of the most valuable things you can do for your family. And I think I've heard of women that have regretted not doing it. But so, you know, this book says stuff like, The goals of young women are to be brainy, beautiful, to have an exciting $75,000 a year job, to nurture two wonderful children and consort with a supportive but equally high-powered husband. I'm like, oh, so I'm not the only one? I mean, and that's the essence of narcissism, that you think that you're the only one, and you're just not. It's the culture has created that, and I've bought into the culture a little bit. But like Aaron was saying, it's been amazing to stay home. I mean, God has given me an identity based on truth, and the truth is that I was called by him. I was chosen by him. I'm part of his spiritual family. I am an heir of his. I've been given spiritual riches. Like Holly said, you should see my house. I mean, it's, 800 foot or whatever, and that's big comparison to the rest of the world, but not compared to our culture and where we live, and not compared to the people that I lived with around in Worthington and stuff. Anyway, but God has saved me from my own, dark heart and my bitterness and resentments and poor choices I've made. So anyway, I just wanted to share that choosing to stay home has been the biggest joy that I have received. And my little girl yesterday gave me a flower, and she said, "This is a gift for you." And I was like, "Thank you." I was kind of bored. We were looking up at the sky, and we were watching the planes go by, which is cool. And I'm kind of half praying in my head, like, "Lord, thanks for how good you are." But she gave me this flower and said, "This is your gift, because you're our gift. You're our gift. You're our," and I just, and I think God transcends the material world and does small stuff like that when you feel like you're not thanked or whatever. And so I guess what I want to say is for me, it was turning to God, and he kind of has led me through decisions. It's him. It's an individual personal relationship with him that he guides you through. And, he guides you to love your family and how to do that. Thanks.
Thanks, ladies. That's great. I had a few thoughts about identity, too. Well, something's not happening, technical people. Okay. Well, I'll tell you some of the thoughts I've had on hindrances to staying at home. Is one idea is I never pictured myself as a mom. I certainly did not picture myself as a mom either. There we go. But that can change. What about this one? I went to school, I spent all this time and all this money to get a career, and now I have to go do that career. But maybe all the time and all the things that you learned, you can use in your career, in your family. You can use those talents in surprising ways with your kids. What about this one? This may be kind of a big one. People might think I'm stupid or lazy. I know one time it was kind of one of those moments that stuck out to me at my home church. At that time, we were hanging out with the artist community in Columbus, and we'd go to these art parties, and it was super cool. I have artists in my family. But at one point, there was kind of a snooty artist that came and said to me, "Oh, what medium are you working with?" And I said, "Mostly crayons and Play-Doh these days." And this person was like, "Oh," and walked away. And it kind of stung a little bit. But what should I have done? Been dishonest? I don't think so. But the thing that it struck me is like, why? That's that person's problem. If he thinks I'm stupid, he's looking through a grid that's really lame, And I thought if people like that really knew what it was to be in a satisfying family, they would want to be in a family too. So, if somebody thinks you're stupid, maybe you should think, well, are you stupid? Some days we all do some pretty stupid things, I guess I do. Some days I'm lazy. We had some days where we'd be in our jammies and watching too much TV and, But no, we're not stupid, and we can't let those people dictate our identity and how secure or insecure we feel about our choices and role in life. Our identity as believers is that we're children of God, and those people can't take that away. Maybe you worry, what if someday my husband's gone? And I think, you know, that's a possibility, but if you live your life worrying and being paralyzed by all the what ifs out there, then you're going to be held back. So, if you're stay-at-home moms, we're not just a housewife. Oh, I don't like that word at all, because I'm not married to my house, right? Ew. That in this book, What is a Family? Edith Schaefer has all these really interesting terms to describe career as family. Let's look at your quote sheet again. This is from Edith Schaefer on identity. There are interesting jobs and areas of creativity in work itself, but to put the home on one side and career on the other as two opposite things, one mundane and only a matter of washing floors, dishes, and ironing clothes, the other, fascinating and fulfilling, is to be just plain bankrupt in the area of knowing what life is all about, and particularly as a married person, what family is all about. I like that. Being a housewife is not just scrubbing the floors and all that stuff. This next one, she says, over and over again, someone in a relationship needs to consider the family as a career, a project serious enough to be willing to be the one to scramble up over the jagged rocks to feed the birds so they won't become extinct. The family is even more important than rare species of birds, and taking on the career of being a mother and wife is a fabulously rare life work in the 20th century and a very challenging job. A wasted effort? A thankless job? An undignified slave? No. A most exciting possibility of turning the tide, of saving the species, of affecting history, of doing something that will be felt and heard in ever-widening circles. Awesome. I find that very inspiring, and I hope you do too. Okay. Some reasons to stay at home. For those of us here that are Christians and that we want to be serious about our Christian life, we look to the Bible as an important source of ways to live. So I'm going to share a few verses with you. The first one from Psalm 127 tells us, and it's in your notes, that children are a gift from the Lord. They're a reward from Him. Children born to a young man are like arrows in a warrior's hands. How joyful is the man whose quiver is full of them. Children are a gift from God. It's a stewardship that we have been given to take care of these little ones. And when I was in the hospital and I had my little baby girl, I just felt like, oh, I finally found my role in life is to be her mom. And I took her home and I was like, this is my baby. And I felt like the Lord was saying, actually, she belongs to me. You know, and I thought, well, okay, I want to give her back to you. You know, you are the creator. You've lent her to me for a time, and I'm grateful for that. But really, she's a human being, and she doesn't totally belong to me. Not that I'm going to give up responsibility for her, but in the sense of ownership to realize it's bigger than just me. Proverbs 31, I have a little bit of the quotes. It's all about this awesome woman, and it says she carefully watches everything in her household and suffers nothing from laziness. Her children stand and bless her. Her husband praises her. There are many virtuous and capable women in the world, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty does not last, but a woman who fears the Lord will be greatly praised. So this woman was not a slacker. She was a leader in her family and in the community. And she had so many talents that she was able to use. Deuteronomy 6, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul, mind, and might. And these words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart. You'll teach them diligently to your sons and talk of them when you sit down in your house, when you walk by the way, and when you lie down and when you rise up. So granted, the culture back then, the families were together a lot more. But the idea of taking time and talking with your kids and sharing with them takes time. There's a couple more verses there, but you can read those on your own time. So there's some good reasons for staying at home. But here's the question we want to know. What's in it for me? Is it an opportunity for me to lay down and just be a doormat and let everybody run all over me while I run around trying to take care of them? The idea of a hausfrau, you know? I don't think so. That's not very appealing to me. And I don't think that that's God's way either. Here's one thing that's in it for me is the idea of nurture. This is Paul talking about his spiritual children, but look at the imagery. We prove to be gentle among you as a nursing mother tenderly cares for her own children. Having so fond an affection for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but our own lives, because you had become very dear to us. So this whole nurturing aspect is something that we can do as stay-at-home moms. We only have a short time with them at home in the grand scheme of things, a short time for listening and observing versus having some frantic schedule that there's no time for this kind of tender affection to happen. You know, we only have so much energy physically, emotionally, spiritually. There's a limited amount. So we need to invest that energy wisely or we're going to run out. Here's my sweeties. Jess, Brett, and Joe. And when I look at them, I think, boy, what I wouldn't give for a day or a week or a month to go back in time. Oh. Sorry. But I did have a lot of fun with them. And what I was going to say was, it's so nice for me, so satisfying, and I hope this doesn't come off like super prideful, but to look at those guys and say, I was there with them, and I was there for them, and I'm so glad that I don't have to look at this picture and say, I missed that, and it's too late, and be full of regrets. I got to get those guys off there. Okay. Discipleship. There's an opportunity for discipleship. This verse is particularly talking to fathers. Don't provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, which also, I think, applies to moms. And like the lady said, it doesn't necessarily feel like discipleship when you're home changing diapers, that's for sure. But sitting from where I'm sitting, it is, and it makes a difference. Bring them up in the discipline of the Lord. That was hard for me growing up with no discipline whatsoever, but I read books by Dobson and so forth, and I, you know, learned some things about that. Bring them up in the instruction of the Lord. And this is not to be boring or legalistic, like, now's our time to read the Bible. But this quote is out of place on your outline. I can't ever do anything quite perfectly. If you want to follow along, it's at the bottom of page 4. This is from a book called Honey for a Child's Heart. She says, parents are not really convinced of the importance of biblical instruction. Not really, I said, because we do arrange for what we believe is important. Life is never so busy that we don't manage to see that our family has nourishing food, adequate clothing, and proper sleep. And yes, we see that they get to Sunday school, church, youth organizations, and all the busy extras of life. But parents who never read God's word outside of an organized meeting of the church are not likely to sense the urgency of instructing children in the most important truth in the world. If we really believe that knowing God and His Son is the most vital experience in the world, how dare we leave the responsibility for instruction to someone else? So that's up to us. And please don't bore your children with it. Sanctification, that's one of those real churchy sounding words, and it just means spiritual growth. After we become Christians, we want to grow in our relationship with God. So here's one verse where Jesus said, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. So here's a principle as believers in our walk with God, the principle of denying ourselves. And the next one is similar to that, 2 Corinthians 5. For the love of Christ controls us, having concluded this, that one died for all, therefore all died. He died for all so that they who live might no longer live for themselves, but for him who died and rose again on their behalf. So here we see the gospel that he died for us, but we also see our walk with God, motivated by the love of God, that we're not just living for ourselves. And this is what leads to true fulfillment and purpose and joy, is living for God and putting him first. Another thing we get out of it is the victorious sacrificial life, which brings joy. This one says, I have no greater joy than this, to hear my children walking in the truth. And from where I'm sitting, that is better than any gold medal in the Olympics or anything that I can imagine, to see my children walking in the truth. So the greatest thing I think we can do for our kids is to put God first and to follow him. So women are very powerful. You know, the Bible has a very high view of women, and it's not the view that a lot of churches have gotten out there, that women are kind of stupid and second-class citizens. Women are influencers, for good or for bad, but women are very powerful leaders. So let's talk now a little bit about, okay, what will I do when I'm at home? Well, not perfection. In this book, What is a Family?, she says over and over and over, if you expect perfection or nothing, you will get nothing every time. So let's lay down our standards. I was going to ask you to raise your hands. I won't embarrass you. But think about this. How many moms here suffer sometimes from guilty feelings about being a mom? Yeah. Well, I'd like to challenge you on that, because guilty feelings are so unproductive. They put a block in our relationships. They don't do anybody any good. So when you have those days where you're stupid or lazy, please don't feel guilty. You know, if you're feeling guilty because you're doing something that's actually hurtful to your child or neglecting them, then get some help. But don't go around feeling guilty that you're not perfect. One thing we have to do when we're at home is economize. You wouldn't want to be a stay-at-home mom with a dad out there working, and then every time he comes home, you're like, I need a new kitchen, I need new carpeting, and that's kind of contradictory. So learn to economize, and we get a chance to sacrifice. What a great opportunity to learn that as moms, when we're in a situation where we have to sacrifice and we can't always live for ourselves. We can learn that principle of Christian growth. Great opportunity. Okay, here's some things that we can do at home. One is to build memories. Not all memories, you know, are good ones. But even in the bad memories, we can have some understanding of what it's like to live in a fallen world when you have to pick up the pieces and start over again. Traditions are important. The idea where the kids are like, we always do this. I realized a few years back I had a little treasure hunt on Christmas for a couple of the grandkids, but I didn't realize when I did it that that tradition would be solid forever. Now I have to remember every year to do that thing. Some more quotes on your sheet on memories. Constantly, you need to think of the memory value as well as the practical monetary value of what you're using your money for as you bring up your family. Excuse me. Constantly, you need to think what will last longer with greater results, a new car or a memory. What about schedule, sleep, school, meals on time, and the usual standard of values as to how to use time day by day? There are times when memories are in danger of being unrecognized and time is going to be wasted or lost with the memory uncaptured. And the next one, someone in the family, one who's happily making it his or her career, or both parents, at least one person needs to be conscious that memories are important and that time can be made to have double value by recognizing that what is done today will be tomorrow's memory. So, memories, creating that. If you do read the Edith Schaefer book, by the way, sometimes her language is super flowery, especially in the beginning, so hang in there, because she's got good principles, but a little flowery sometimes. Education is part of what we do at home as parents, and part of education is critical thinking skills. We got to teach our kids to have some critique of the media and advertising. You know, and that takes time and observation to make sure that your children are thinking about some of these things. and that the world system is not something to be afraid of, and it's not something to be attracted to. But the world system is something that needs to be critiqued, and the people in the world need to be loved. But that requires some thinking. What will I do at home? Nature. So many times, taking a walk in the woods, going camping, different nature things are so meaningful for the kids. Psalm 19 says, "The heavens are telling of the glory of God, and their expanse is declaring the work of his hands." So there's something about the heavens that we can study and learn something about God. The one in Luke there is where he says, "Consider the ravens and consider the lilies," to think about these things in nature. Psalm 50, "Every beast of the forest is mine, the cattle on a thousand hills. I know every bird in the mountains, and everything that moves in the field is mine." That's a good reason to do some nature observation, I think. Good memories from that. Creativity. Edith Schaefer says the home is the family is to be the birthplace of creativity. And as believers, we know that we're made in the image of a creator, a creative God. So as believers, we shouldn't be plain and drab and think that that is somehow spiritual. We should be creative. There's a little quote here on that too. I like this one, because partly I'm a messy person. "A clean and orderly house is a joy to everyone, yet there's a need to be sensitive to the greater importance of freedom to paint, mix clay, scatter pieces of cloth, and cutting out a dress or a sail." So if you want to have a perfect house, then maybe you need to relax on that a little bit and foster some creativity with your kids. Here's a couple ideas in the area of creativity. I had this book when my kids were little, Let's Make a Memory. It looked different from that, but it has lots of ideas of things to do with your kids to make memories. This one's out of print, Snips and Snails and Walnut Whales. It's a nature craft, so we would get things in nature and do stuff with them, and my kids have a lot of really good memories from these creative attempts. What will I do at home? What about reading aloud to your kids? And this is a big favorite of mine. So many things that kids can gather from reading: vicarious learning, warm relationships as we're sitting together reading books. Hopefully it will inspire curiosity in our kids and a desire to learn more. It can give empathy to our kids. I have a lot of quotes on that. Let's see here. Let's do the second one under reading. When a child identifies with either a real or fictional character in a book who demonstrates courage or faith or honesty or determination or kindness or any one of the qualities so important to nurture in a child's own character, all those values are reinforced in the child's consciousness. When the effects of dishonesty, unkindness, carelessness, hypocrisy, and other wrong behavior are observed in the course of a story or a nation's history, the truth is learned with lasting effectiveness. And let's see the next one. Facing failures and tragedies with the characters of a story may vicariously give children the experience of courage and loyalty, weeping with some and rejoicing with others. This is the beginning of a compassionate heart. So here's some things to think about. And read those quotes. They're awesome, too. It's one of the things that I really am glad I did with my kids. Here's two books, The Read Aloud Handbook and Honey for a Child's Heart. They talk about reading, but they also have lists of good books and little descriptions. So, yeah, I have my versions that are quite old, but I love to go back and get ideas of good books to read. Here's a little poem. Part of a poem, actually. "You may have tangible wealth untold, caskets of jewels and coffers of gold. Richer than I, you will never be. I had a mother who read to me." Love it. So read. I read about a study from the University of Nebraska. It was some long time ago. And it was on the secrets of strong families. And this is what they came up with. These qualities. Commitment is a secret to a strong family. It seems kind of self-evident, but the idea that when you come home to family, like, I'm your biggest fan. We are committed to each other. Home is a safe place where you can come and be welcomed. time together. And in this study, they said one thing they found that a lot of strong families did was camping. So that kind of fits with the nature thing, but having good time together, having an atmosphere of appreciation is so important. You know, we live in a culture of complaint. It's so contagious. Where does everybody complains all the time, but we can turn that around and have an atmosphere that's positive and appreciative. Communication, spiritual wellness, and coping with crises are the other secrets of strong families. So what will I do at home? Another thing we can do is view our family as we are a family on a mission. We don't exist just for ourselves. We're here for something bigger than for all of us. And this is where ministry comes in. Loving and serving people outside the family and outside the church, having that outward focus is so important for the kids. Having people into your home, having them see and be involved in seeing people's lives changed, it's amazing. This is I guess I should make a comment here too with the moms is you gotta also get out of the house sometimes and do some ministry, meet with some friends, come to things like this, but ministry. Here's a really good quote by Honey for a Child's Heart. Hunt. She says, "What I'm saying is simply this. As Christian parents, we're concerned about building whole people, people who are alive emotionally, spiritually, and intellectually. The instruction to train up a child in the way he should go encompasses so much more than teaching him the facts of the gospel. It's to train the child's character, to give him high ideals and encourage integrity. It's to provide largeness of thought, creative thinking, imaginative wondering, an adequate view of God and his world. He can never really appreciate the finest without personal redemption, but many a redeemed person lives in a small, insecure world because he's never walked with God into the larger place, which is his domain. We have books and the book at our disposal to use wisely for God's glory. A young child, a fresh, uncluttered mind, a world before him, to what treasures will you lead him? With what will you furnish his spirit?" So, one more. On the next page, 5, from What is a Family? Edith Schaefer practiced this. They had people in their home all the time. She said, "There's nothing that's more helpful for your own children than their becoming involved in compassion for people. There's nothing more beneficial for your children than discovering how exciting it is to know that someone has passed from darkness to light because of the time spent in your home. To find that happiness really comes in the midst of seeing someone else helped, especially if helped to find eternal life, as well as to begin to have a changed life here, teaches the whole family what life is all about." So having a bigger vision for your family. And don't worry if your house is not perfect all the time. Sometimes we're like, "I don't want anybody coming over to see this mess." But let's keep the big picture in mind. Finally, what will I do at home? Love. Love those sweeties. Somebody was talking about daycares, and they said daycare people can do a lot for your kids, but they can't love them. So the idea when you come home that we're like, "I'm your biggest fan. I love you no matter what. You're not the center of the universe, but I love you with all my heart." 1 Peter 4:8 says, "Love covers a multitude of sins." So it's good for me to know that when my kids grew up, they knew that they were loved. And winding it up here, I had some thoughts on what do I hope to see in my kids. I hope my kids have a happy childhood, that they have good memories, that they can look back on their life and be like, "It's good." I hope that my kids will grow up and know that they were loved. I hope that they will have compassion for poor and lost people, not to be afraid of them. I hope my kids will be independent adults and lifelong learners and have a sense of curiosity. I really wanted my kids to know that God was real for them. I can't give them my relationship with God, but he seemed very faithful in making himself real in their little world, which is exciting. And I want my kids to realize that they have a responsibility to their own generation to pass along the baton of truth and to share with people that are going to be their peers. So there's some equipping there that maybe needs to go on. And finally, then, I just have one more quote for you on vision from Edith Schaefer, who wrote a long time ago, but I think it's still true. She says, if ever a movement were needed, it's a movement to reestablish family life. As one can imagine, the world becoming a dry desert devoid of plant life because of ecological balances, one can also imagine family shriveling up and leaving a desert, too, as far as human personalities are concerned. Any one family is an oasis. The springing up of many green spots in the desert is needed at the cost of people putting other people before their own search for happiness. The mere existence of an oasis is important to the traveler in the desert. The mere existence of a family, even a widely scattered family, is important to people. So I think that's a good vision for our attempts at being moms and stay-at-home moms, you know, to see our family as an oasis. So I've given you a few resources. Just this fall, our elders had a meeting where they talked about stay-at-home moms. And there's a lot of statistics about the cost of daycare, and a lot of, you can see the heart of the eldership in this church about this notion of being a stay-at-home mom. There's a simple living class coming up soon taught by Joe Boddy, which would go right along with some of the things that we've talked about. And again, what is a family? I loved it. And I think I gave you a book list there, too. So it is one of the most satisfying things that I have done in my life is to be a mom, to be a stay-at-home mom. And I encourage all of you, as much as possible, to be home there with your kids and make a difference. So do we have any questions or comments? You have to wait for the microphone.
Thanks, Holly. A couple thoughts. I'm kind of, my youngest is 12, so I'm kind of on the other end of this. But one thing I know when I have gone to parenting classes before, it's just remembering grace, because it's easy to sit here and think, oh my gosh, I haven't done that, I haven't done that, I haven't done that. So just wanted to put that out there to remember that we do have grace, we're going to fail. And also the only other thing that I feel like really helped me through was praying, finding someone to pray with. If you're not involved in a home group, make sure that you have other people you can get together with. You know, when you lose it and you scream at your kids, you're not the only one. To have someone else to be like, you know, I did this, pray for me. Those are the things that are going to get you through.
That's excellent advice. When I first had Jesse, I was the only person I knew that had kids, so I was kind of tricky with all my single friends. But then more and more of my friends had kids, and that was so helpful to pray with people, to realize, you know, we all stumble in many ways. So, yes, there's grace. Thanks for making that point. Yes?
I just want to comment on the whole diaper changing thing. I have four children, ages 18 to 10, two boys and two girls, and I remember the drudgery and just the never ending and having two in diapers, and some days all I did was change poopy diapers and give baths and feed them. And it occurred to me that, and I'm sure some of those studies show that the bond that you're building with children from age 0 to 3 is so, 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 so important. And that children need to learn trust. They need to know that they can trust you and that their needs are going to get met. And so even though it seems like I cannot change another diaper, I have a rash on my hands that I have to medicate because I change so many diapers. The unseen work that you're doing there is a foundation and a building for everything in the future, relationship with them. So
there's great.
A bigger picture there.
I totally agree with that. That book, How to Really Love Your Child, talks about things like eye contact and things, and I totally believe that's true. Like, when we're taking care of the needs, there is a bond that forms through that. And, you know, you have to have kind of a big view to get past some of the drudgery, that's for sure.
I just want to share, because me and my husband failed at this area financially. At first, when we got married, I was making more money than he was. And then I had to quit my job, and I got a part-time job, and he got a different job. And we wanted to have kids, and we wanted me to be able to stay at home. And so we decided we were going to just save my half income and live on his. And we tried for over 2 years and could not do it. And so we were like, then I got pregnant. And it was like, what do we do now? And so I quit my job, and I stayed home with our child. We now have 4 kids on his income, which he does get a little bit more each year, but God has been so faithful in providing. And we were like, why could we not live on more than we make now with no kids? Like, we were like, what was going on? But God has been really faithful, and yeah, it's a joy to stay home. It's hard, but I'm so thankful I get to do it. And it's really fun to watch God continue to provide over and over and over and over again in ways that we never anticipated so that, you know, I can stay home.
That's great. I had a similar experience. It's impossible to imagine what it's going to be like before you're in the situation. You can plan for it, but it's surprising how many things like that end up working out, even though they don't make sense on paper, maybe.
Thanks, Holly. I just have a question. I know lots of single women who have a strong desire to be at home with their children, but they just obviously can't do it. So do you have any practical advice on how we can support them and love them and help them to, I don't know, get to that point or just, you know, help them in any way?
Yeah, I think with the single moms, first of all, we need to be sensitive to their situation. I was not in that situation, so I can understand by listening and not having a critical attitude. I think some of these principles single moms can put into play for sure. I think people in the body of Christ can help out, you know, with watching kids or training kids in different situations. I think, you know, we can help and we can be understanding, but we also have to give space for the fact that these people are doing like the hardest job in the world. So I think to be a supportive friend would be good, you know, and as much as possible, if the single moms are able to have some creativity, spend some time reading and doing those things and feel good about that, you know, that would be a big help, I think.
I had been a stay-at-home mom for a long time and just got married 2 months ago, and I have the opportunity to be a stay-at-home mom, and I'm so blessed to have this opportunity to stay home with my kids, and I haven't gotten to the point where I feel useless yet. At this moment, I'm so excited to be there to get the laundry done and to be there with them after school, to walk them to the bus stop. Like, that is so exciting for me, because even when I was married, I was a stay-at-home mom. I did everything at the house and for my kids. And then once that relationship was over, again, I mean, I was the one that was paying all the mortgage, the insurance, and everything at my house. So at this point, to be able to kind of hand that over to my husband as far as the financial stuff, it's scary because I had control over that stuff. So that's kind of where I'm struggling at the moment, but definitely excited about being able to be there for my family and see the importance in it.
That's great. Happy for you on that. Yeah.
I have a question. I have got just one daughter, and she's 8, and my husband's kind of saying, are you ready to go back to work yet? So what are some things that you can direct me to or help me with that conversation?
What I did, I had the similar conversation with my husband when my kids were in grade school at some point, and I was able to find a job that was 2 or 3 hours a day right around the lunch hour when my kids were in school. So I was always there for them in the morning and after school. And so for me, that worked out pretty well. But, you know, it's hard for me to speak specifically to your situation. I mean, I'm working now, but my kids are, you know, long gone out of the home. But I did have some part-time work, and I know some moms find work to do at home. So, yeah, I would be, you know, flexible on that and be supportive, but also try to be there as much as possible, too.
Yeah, I have three children, and my oldest is 15, and my youngest is 5, one in between. And I kind of thought the same when my kids went into school, that I would go back to work. And I find that it was easy to be a stay-at-home mom with my little kids because it was fun and you did all these great things. And now that I have this teenager, I'm thinking, I never signed up for that. I don't really know what to do with that age. And I'm struggling because at that age, they don't appreciate you being home. And but on your point about going back to work, I find that my teenager, my high schooler, needs me more than she realizes. And we've had a lot of, you know, she comes home first, and we've had a lot of time where we sit on the bed and talk about boys and life, you know, and it's been great. But I just hope that we can continue that and growing that relationship.
Teenagers, they're a wild ride, that's for sure. And when you think about the lack of emotional energy, you have to save some for that, because they are not thankful at the time, but they secretly are really thankful, and you'll hear about that later.
I was just going to piggyback on that point. I was a challenge, I think, in my teen years. And if there was one time that I feel like I needed my mom the most, it was before and after school. So even though, you know, your kids are growing up, it's like, I feel like that time is so important. And that's the time when kids end up getting in trouble. You know, if they're not involved in sports or things after school, that's important. So for right now, my kids are young, but my husband and I kind of agree on that point. But I feel like that's kind of a difficult job to find, you know? So hopefully you guys can come to a medium, but I feel like that's a really important time, whether they're 4 or whether they're 15, so.
I agree. Doing whatever we can to keep that relationship warm is good. I think sometimes we think sports is going to keep them out of trouble, but I don't think so. Not the stories I hear is you can get just as much trouble in sports and different kinds of trouble, so. We just need to try to keep the lines of communication open as much as possible. I found with my teenagers that sometimes they were really wanting to talk, sometimes they were really rude. But I was glad to be there for the times when they were ready to talk. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm probably in a little different situation than a lot of people here. I'm probably older than just about everybody here. I'm 51 and have a couple 2-year-olds. And all through my 20s and 30s and even 40s, I, you know, had always sort of envisioned having a family. And I always wondered in my mind, would I be able to give up, you know, pursuing this career? And, you know, the career went better sometimes and not so well other times, and there were some immediate rewards for it. But by the time I had these kids, I was so ready to become a stay-at-home mom and leave that other world behind, because I'd been there long enough. I'd been in this company like 25 years, pretty large company, plenty to do there, and got to see how things I devoted my life to burned up so quickly. They were maybe rewarding and valuable to somebody for a time, but they don't remember me, and I've been gone 2 years. Just something to think about if you're struggling with the giving up of career. What you do at home, the diapering the babies, is going to last so much longer than a business you've built that's suddenly given to somebody else and then they erase it, you know, in a number of months, you know. So
that's great. Thank you for sharing that. That's good to hear. Maybe just a couple more.
A lot of what you talked about really spoke to just my experience over the last couple of years. My daughter's 3. I was not the woman who saw myself being the mother of anybody or married or any of that. I just didn't have that kind of vision for my life. And it's been cool to see how challenging it is to receive input that is super encouraging. Like one of my friends said to me maybe 20 times before I finally started to hear her, it's a privilege to be at home with your kids. And that was a really challenging thought to work through before God. You know, like, what does that mean it's a privilege? Because I kind of want to get out of here sometimes. It gets crazy and overwhelming. So anyway, I'm picturing my life right now as you're talking. I'm in the middle of scraping wallpaper in the house we just bought this spring. It's a wreck. Like, the house is just a disaster. And my daughter is on the floor cutting paper. And, I mean, it's chaos, but it's really fun. But at the same time, I have an art degree, and when you were talking about getting messy and having fun, for those who are a little intimidated by that, just because I'm a creative person doesn't mean I get messy and have fun, because I've been trained in what that creativity should look like. And so there really are a lot of thoughts to just sort of bring before God or talk with friends about, like, what does it look like? What does a privilege look like? What does creativity look like? What does identity look like? Because a lot of people can maybe even try to draw their identity from being a stay-at-home mom. And how do you find the balance there between, you know, separating your identity from the world, but then putting your identity in being a stay-at-home mom? What would you say to that?
Well, one thing, my husband wrote a really good book on our identity in Christ called Walking in Victory. So to have some teachings about that helps. Because we just naturally try to take our identity from all these other things. And we trade one for another, like you said. So I think being involved in a home group and learning God's view of us, that builds a really good foundation for it. Also, I think it's been helpful for me to see people in taking their identity from these various things and realizing that's a dead-end road. You know, here's some mom who's totally taking her identity from her child. Her child feels suffocated and resentful about it and can't wait to get away from her. So it's like, ooh, I don't really want to go down that road. Sometimes I learn by learning, and sometimes I learn by watching other people. So that, in a nutshell, is what I would suggest.